We'll do the usual scribe selection, introductions, reintroductions, announcements, reminders. For progress on action items, we're going to we're going to do it differently this time. I'm going to have Dave Longley present about basically a proposal he has around bids, proof purposes, and verification methods and naming. So he sent this out on the email mailing list a while ago. So I wanted to pull that one in. Anyone who has work item status to report should speak up during that time. But effectively, the bulk of the meeting will be a combination of work item status review and new work items. So at that point, we're going to call on a few people to officially propose some work items. And it's a pretty full agenda, and it'll be pretty process-oriented. Apologies in advance. Let's see. Okay, so IP note, anyone can participate in these calls. However, if you have not agreed to the group's IP policy, we cannot consider substantive contributions. And some notes on these calls. The minutes and an audio recording of everything said on this call is archived at this location. Is someone speaking? I keep hearing noise. Okay, so we use IRC to cue speakers during this call as well as to take minutes. I won't post it in IRC because, there's a bootstrapping problem there. All attendees should type, we're missing something, present plus. I changed it this time because I noticed the instruction said present plus in your name, but really if you do present plus, just like Dave and Mike just did, that works best for me. If you want to be added to the queue, type Q plus, and you can add an optional reminder, for example, Q plus, and then a sentence. And if you're not an IRC, just ask to be put on the queue, and we'll call on you. Lastly, please be brief so you can so the rest of the queue can get a chance to chime in. You can queue plus yourself again to respond. So now let's do scribe selection. Again, we've updated this recently, the goal of having this list be more current. Okay, so here's the list of scribes. Okay, so Adrian, I'm guessing, still hasn't taken the training. Benjamin Young, would you be able to scribe today? I don't think he's here. Who else? Bowden Andres? Brent Zundel? Chris Weber? Again, I'm calling, asking for someone to do scribe duty. Dan Pape. Daniel Buckner. David Chadwick. Let's see, David Lane. Dimitri. Z. Okay. Let's see. We're doing scribe nomination. Let's see. Okay, Drummond Reed, Charles O'Carroll, Jeff Orgel. I think I should omit the chairs from the group. Joe Kaplan. Jonathan Holt, Kalia, myself, no, that's not going to work, Kalpreet, Lucas, would you be able to scribe today?
Yeah, I'll give it a shot.
Excellent, thank you so much. Okay, so now let's do introductions and reintroductions. So I actually have, actually identify yourself if you're new, but first I'm going to introduce Philip Schmidt. So I'm here at the Media Lab with Philip, who was a founder of BlockCert. So we've been working with him for a while. And so I'm going to ask him to introduce himself.
Hi, everyone. I've been following along on the email list, although I've been very quiet, but then also talking to Kim about how some of the standards that you guys are working on will affect the field that I'm most focused on, which is digital credentials for academic use cases, universities primarily. So I'm excited to be here.
Thank you, Philip. And I'm just going to type your name into IRC. Does anyone else, is anyone else new to the group that wants to introduce themselves?
Hi, it's Michael Herman here. I'm brand new to this particular call. My interest is enabling end-to-end business processes on the blockchain, and my specific interest on the Indy Sovereign side is how to represent business documents. And the thing that I'm contributing the most on right now is trying to clarify the draft DID specification, improving the precision of the language, and something I've contributed in that area is this Indy Sovereign architecture reference model.
Great. And I'm sorry, can you repeat your name once more?
Michael Herman, H-E-R-M-A-N.
Okay, great. I see you here. Hi, thanks for joining us. Reintroductions. Let's see who's up. Brent, are you here?
I am here.
Could you reintroduce yourself?
Sure, I can do that. My name is Brent Sundell. I work with Evernym. I do crypto engineering with them. Been involved in the credentials community group since the rebooting that was in Boston. I don't know what number it was. We're currently moving forward trying to doing work with the verifiable credentials working group and hammering out what Sovereign and Evernym need to get hammered out in order to work with that data model.
Great, thank you. Oh, I see a help entered. Michael, is that you? Okay, I see. Oh, yeah, okay, we won't take it on the call. It looks like you're asking for help in IRC. Okay, let's move to announcements and reminders. So first, again, we've locked in the date of rebooting Web of Trust 8. That will be March 1st through the 3rd in Barcelona. There's a few events before and after. Joe sent the Eventbrite for that. Actually, I'm going to come right back to that because I wanted to weigh in on or get someone to weigh in on surrounding events. The second one, though, is IAW, which is April 30th through May 2nd in Mountain View, California. And that information is right here. Okay, so about – I wanted to bring this up real fast because I think – I've seen quite a few emails on the VCWG mailing list. It's still not clear to me. It sounds like we might be doing a verifiable credentials meetup in Barcelona right after rebooting. Does anyone have anything to add in there? Joe?
We're definitely going to do it. We just got confirmation that we're going to push forward with that on the call that we just ended. So the 4th and 5th, which is the Monday and Tuesday after rebooting Web of Trust, will be a face-to-face for the Verifiable Claims Working Group. That's only open to members and guests. So if you would like to go, you can contact the chairs of Verifiable Claims Working Group and ask for an invitation. There's a limited number, but there is a number. So if you're interested in going and you're going to be in the area, please reach out to Dan Burnett or Matt Stone.
Thanks, Joe. Dan, you're up.
Yes, I was just going to add that I had sent an email to the CCG mailing list last week, I think it was, announcing the meeting, and so you can just reply to that to talk with me and or Matt about, you know, if you're interested in attending.
Okay, great. Thank you. Okay, next we have progress on action items. So we're going to do it a little differently this time for related to the reasons I sent out over email yesterday. We have a few work item and action item process issues to clean up. So while I think in general we are going to do recurring reviews, like to identify unlabeled items, items without owners, but we're skipping those because we're kind of jumping into the heart of that for the whole session. So instead, I wanted to ask Dave Longley to present on a new issue, and it's tracked, let me dig that up one sec. This is the link, and title is DIDs, Proof Purposes, and Verification Methods. Dave, can you talk to that?
Sure. So we've been tightening up our implementations of linked data proofs, object capabilities, and DIDs, and we wanted to make sure while we were doing that, that we were taking into consideration community input around terminology. And so I typed up this email and sent it to the mailing list that has some of the terminology specifics that I'm talking about. Effectively, there are a number of terms we've been using, either just talking to in the community, and some terms that have been going into proofs and DID documents and things of that nature. Some of those terms, which I talk about in the email, such as cryptographic suites and creator and owner, are terms that we've been debating in the community and considering changing because they've caused some confusion. And so the email is about, is it Michael Herman? This is Dave Longley who's speaking. Some of these, so in the email I've given some alternative names for the terminology, taking into account what people have been discussing in the community. We've talked to some of you, and there are actually some issues in the issue tracker for some of these. The main one that is on the issue tracker that I didn't really mention in the email, because we have a lot of discussion in the issue tracker, is stopping the use of owner and changing it to controller. And so while working on the linked data proofs, changes, and implementations, we adopted the term controller. I think I was the main person pushing back on that because we had implementations out there that were using the term owner. And so we've accepted using the term controller, and we're interested in getting that issue accepted into the DID spec, that change. But the email also talks about changing cryptographic suites to verification methods, as cryptographic suites has been a sort of a confusing term and is an existing term of art that makes people think of something else versus what we're talking about. The other terms that we've changed are replacing creator. replacing creator where that appears in proofs, to change that to be verification method, because people have in the community have said that when they see creator and they're trying to deal with verifying proofs, they confuse. So the value of the creator field is actually typically for a signature is an identifier of a public key, and that that creator field has led people to believe that it's actually an entity that controls a public key. And so by changing it to verification method, we get a couple of advantages, like public key makes more sense. It is a verification method for a signature, and it also allows us to work towards making proofs more generic. So because we're also throughout the community, we've talked about having a whole variety of different kinds of proofs, not just digital signatures, but maybe also biometrics and things of that nature. The other main terminology change, which isn't so much of a change, but more of an adoption or a suggestion that we try to include in every proof a proof purpose. And this helps tighten up the use of proofs in the ecosystem. If we ensure that whenever somebody is creating a proof, they in that proof, along with whatever's being digitally signed or approved, they include a purpose for why they did that proof, that helps eliminate some edge cases that can be security problems. So for example, you might create a proof for the purpose of authentication, which would be different from creating a proof where you're just trying to assert something, where you might be making an assertion like a verifiable credential. You don't want that data to be reused as an authentication method for you, because you want to be able to pass these verifiable credentials off to holders who then may present them to establish attributes about themselves, which you don't want them to be passing those verifiable credentials off to authenticate as the person who made the assertion. So including in a proof what the purpose of the proof is something that's important, and there's some terminology related to that that is also related to the DID spec. So we have things in the DID spec like an authentication field, which mm-hmm. establishes a link. It's effectively an authorization link between the entity that controls the DID document and verification methods. So an entity that's controlling a DID document can say that these public keys are for authentication, or they can say that these public keys are for assertions. This also covers the case of object capabilities, where an entity that controls a DID document can say that these public keys are for invoking capabilities or delegating capabilities. And so there's a number of categories that I cover in the email related to proof purposes, and I also go through in the email, if you want to get into the details, how linked data proofs work and how all these elements tie together, so that you can make sure that when you make a proof for something and you pass it off to be verified, that the entity, whoever's verifying that proof, can make sure that the proof was made for a purpose that you authorized, using a verification method that you authorized and a verification method that matches the type of proof that was created. So it sort of tightens all those things up and uses and introduces new terminology that tries to be more specific about all of that. That's it. The email's out there. I'd love to have more feedback to see what people think, but in general we've tried to incorporate what we already believe we have consensus on in the community.
Thanks, Dave. And again, the reason, so those aren't separate work items, because it's sort of broader changes affecting existing, draft reports that we're working on. We wanted to talk about that, see if anyone has any feedback. I don't see anyone on the queue. So, follow what Dave said. Basically, check out the email and just respond to that if you have any responses. I think we don't need to do the sort of week waiting time thing, because what will happen is you'll see those manifested as pull requests and things like that. Okay, Manu, you're up.
Yeah, just to mention, we definitely need feedback on this stuff sooner than later. We will discuss it at Rebooting 8, but there are like implementations that are starting to put this stuff in. As Dave said, like, this should be where consensus is. So if anyone like disagrees with this direction strongly, let us know, because we've taken the input from the past two rebootings, we've taken input from the Sovereign Evernym folks, we've taken input from like Dan Buckner and Mike Jones at Microsoft, and modified things as a result of that. So people hopefully will be very happy with these sets of changes. We're just looking for the one or two people that may object to it. If there are no objections, all of these changes will be applied to the next rev of the DID spec, and linked data suites and all that kind of stuff. And the implementations, like I think the linked data proofs, linked data signatures, object capabilities implementations have already implemented this stuff to make sure that it like works. Right, when you put it together in the ecosystem, that all of it fits together nicely. That's it.
Okay, so for to close out the work item status review part, I want to see if anyone just add yourself to the queue or speak up if you have any status you want to report on either work items or action items.
Kim, does that cover, like, new work items that we might talk about today, or is that a separate topic?
Not those. We're going to get to those. So, yeah, this is more like status of things outside of this. All new work items we'll talk about at the end.
Okay. I do, since Michael Herman's on the call today. Hi, Michael. My name's Manu. I'm one of the DidSpec editors. And I just wanted to thank you for all of the issues that you've raised on the DID spec and the verifiable credential spec. We will get to them at some point. We're under some pretty extreme work pressure right now to get the verifiable credential stuff wrapped up. So a lot of our editorial effort is going towards that. But we've been watching the issues that you've raised kind of stream in. And noted the frustration in some of the some of the way the spec is written. I think they're all good catches. We have responses to all of them, but it's going to take us time to kind of make those changes over the next couple of months.
Thanks, Manu. And yes, Michael, you're up.
Well, I just kind of wanted to. Kind of highlight where I'm headed on that. So there's quite a few, and for people that aren't familiar with the list, there's like 36 issues that I've added about the DID spec, which is too many to go over individually. And so my consultation with some other people in the community, what I'm going to try and do is roll those up into maybe 3 or 4 or 5 kind of main topics. And if we can discuss those, then I think the details of the other 36 issues kind of fall out. And this Indy architecture reference model is kind of an important part of that discussion. So for me, it's a work in progress, and the monkey's still on my back to try and kind of roll up those issues into a smaller number of things that are easier to talk about.
Great, that was very helpful. Okay, so I think the bulk of the meeting we'll be talking about various work item issues. And so let me start off with the topic that I kicked off on the mailing list yesterday. As I looked through the current work items, I realized that we had a fairly unclear state of a lot of things. One of the reasons is that we had not been being very crisp in our communications around how to create new work items and also how to close work items. And the first one is the one that it's just that we were being informal with our description of it as opposed to pointing people to the full details involving, identifying multiple owners, things like that. The close work item process we're still working on, but as I mentioned, what I want to do is, address all the problems I saw to sort of optimize for unblocking the community, and then it's on the chairs to, get rid of the bottlenecks that we've introduced. So let me see. Okay, so the most critical one is, I thought I had a link here, but we're actually going to review the new work item process subsequently, but the main point is that, if you have a new work item to propose, follow the process that we're going to describe shortly. And again, the main gap I saw is that we hadn't been identifying multiple owners. So I think that's really the main thing that we had failed to do to kick off work items. The other thing, of course, is that we weren't really following the one week countdown kind of process where, announce it in the CCG, announce it on the mailing list, wait a week for feedback, that part. Let's see. Okay. The thing that is critical for the chairs to work on, and this is one of our highest priorities, or our highest priority probably, is that we need to work on completing the closing a work item process. And in fact, that's blocking the closure of work items that are still pending. So after we complete that, we'd like to start flushing out some work items that are that are all but done. And then lastly, we have a few kind of blocked items or items that were sort of not in a clear state that the chairs and owners will work together to figure out. And there's a few other things, but those are sort of the most critical items right now to straighten out. And the other thing, of course, is that, through a combination of GitHub templates and, just having clearer pointers, we're hoping to avoid that in the future. I think we just got a little sloppy there. So let's see, work items. Okay. I want to show some updates, and this is our work items page, but it's been heavily redone, and it will be redone again. Now the main point that I wanted to get out of this is just to understand what is the state, what do we have on these things, are there repos, are there drafts, all of this kind of stuff. So I want to call attention to the table of contents and basically, so potential work items, we're going to talk about those and try to propose some today. Let's see. So the next major section is current work items. And those are the ones where you see, well, you see the registries and that's pretty good actually at the moment. I think we're pretty happy with that. But down in that table, wherever you see status, if you see, for example, in the W3 CCG process row, you see that it's blocking others with, a footnote to more details. But basically, that's blocking everything that it does. It needs closed process. And probably I should just change that to say blocked. But so there's quite a few that we think are almost there, but they need, one, they need spec text. We'll get to that later. But then even once they have that, they'll need to go through the closing, the work item close process. And again, that's what the chairs need to work on. The last major section in this document is very empty. It's the completed work items section. And so the goal here is to capture, obviously the closed work items. And ideally we'd like, I don't know if this needs to be here. We can rethink the structure of all of this later, but we wanted to get the information there. So, for example, there are some specifications that we want to talk about were incubated through this group. But for example, the verifiable credentials lifecycle report that David Chadwick worked on, we wanted to record that it's closed and it's been integrated into the verifiable credentials data model. So, we may provide more information, but so that's the overall structure. So I just wanted to show you that real quickly so that you can refer to this to, kind of see the current state of what's happening. Okay, so any questions on that before I move on? Okay, I don't see anything. So that's great. That gives us okay.
Sorry, so the new process is being documented where, or rather the document, where's the documentation for the process?
Yes. And this is the part that, there's two aspects. So one, we're going to talk about the new work item process specifically next, but the overall new process documentation that the chairs are working on is in this link that I just shared. So we welcome, encourage any comments that you might have to add. There's some uncertainties in the close work item and other aspects of this document, but we are confident about the new work item process, which we'll talk about next, and that's why we're going to sort of focus on pushing some of those through today. Okay, so yeah, we can move on to the next section, which is new work items. And, oops, sorry, I didn't say that quite right. Okay, yeah, new work items. So I'm going to walk through the new work item process just to make sure there are no surprises. And then we can start the actual kickoff process of work item topics that are remembered. Or that are ready, sorry. And then we're going to talk about two ones that we mentioned last meeting, which are the credentials community group survey that Heather had mentioned, and then functional identity as a potential work item. And I'm going to ask Joe to talk to that. Okay, so again, this is the new work item. So this isn't just new work item process, but I'm going to say this is all of the new CCG process stuff that the chair has been iterating on. I couldn't link into the page, so what I wanted to do is ask people to scroll down to page 4, work item process. And let me know if you have any problems with any of that. So again, we're going to look at work item process on page 4 of that document. Okay, so the initial steps are pretty standard. You know, you create an abstract or draft, and most commonly we've seen that's a Google Doc or a Markdown page. It's in GitHub sometimes. People already have a spec text, but that's not required. So basically, any way of capturing it, I'm just listing the most common ones. Okay, so the person has to make sure that, the proposer has to make sure that there's a lead or a person responsible for advancing the work item, and there has to be at least one other sponsor. So, and again, that doesn't mean financial commitment. It just means it's someone with skin in the game. They're willing to advance the work item as an editor or whatever appropriate party. I have a to-do. I don't know if it's a requirement that the person must be from a different company. But I don't think we need – that doesn't really affect any of the work items in process now, so we can iterate on that in the document. So post a GitHub issue in the, you know, the CCG GitHub organization in the community repo, but don't create a CCG repo yet. They'll be one created for you later. So, for example, you could create it in your personal GitHub account and then tag the issue as a proposed work item. So those are the low-level details. Effectively, what I'm going to do instead of that is, you know, we're creating GitHub issue templates. So some of those can be done just through the template, like the tag, and we can have fields asking you to identify owners and things like that. So we want to try to make it easier, but these are sort of the raw steps involved in the prerequisite work. Then that's followed up by proposing the work item on the weekly call and the mailing list. So, you know, you can do that in whatever order, but basically you need both to happen before the one-week comment countdown process starts. Oh, no, it sounds like I dropped for a second. Did anyone miss anything critical with what I said?
We didn't miss anything, at least
no,
I didn't.
I didn't miss anything.
No, there was no
okay.
drop.
Okay. Yeah, so any questions or comments about that process? Okay, I don't see anything. Okay, that's great. Just one second. And the other thing I wanted to do is send an example of something that is sort of conformant right now. Okay, so let's take one that Manu did, for example. and he's going to present it in just a little bit, but I'm the reason I'm talking to it right now is just the formatting. So this is the Ashley proposal, work item proposal, and in there, note that he has, you know, proposed work item label. There's editors and contributors listed there, more than one. He already listed the or proposed it in the mailing list, and so he has a link here to the details of that. So, in fact, he already described this in the CCG last week, but so he doesn't have to go into as much depth as he did before. But the reason I want to go through this is just because our processes were out of whack. I just want to make sure that we're doing things right. So, you know, he posted to the email address he's going to describe here, and then we're going to start the 1 week countdown for any substantive objections to why we shouldn't do HashLink here. Otherwise, we're going to formally accept that as a work item. We're going to create a GitHub repo for it, and they can start moving forward. So with that, Manu, do you want to start with it, basically in any order? I sort of jumped ahead to HashLink, but.
Sure, I did put myself on the queue about process stuff. So you asked about, you know, does anyone have any questions about the process? When I was reading that document, you know, my immediate reaction to it was like, that looks like a lot of process, and, you know, the preference is to keep process as light as possible. I think, you know, but at the same time, you know, there has to be some kind of process so people kind of know how to engage with the community. My hope is that the chairs have tried to put as much of the process burden on themselves or the people that are running the community or running the process rather than on the people that are trying to contribute, right? So I think, you know, if people want to contribute, something as simple as writing it up in email and sending it to the mailing list should be good enough to kick off the process. And at that point, you know, the hope is that the chairs or people that have been in the community for a while will help guide those people through the process. The other thing to note is that, you know, you said that there, you know, we could do an issue template to make it so that it's basically like filling out a simple form in an issue tracker, and that's all you need to kind of kick the process off, and then the kind of chairs take over the process from then on. So do you have any thoughts on kind of ease of use of the process, you know, or specifically around, you know, preventing us from becoming like process heavy?
Yeah, I mean, certainly my preference is for the latter. So one, what I don't want is something where we go through the usual thing every time. We have to sort of say, okay, you need to go get another owner. There's a wait period, things like that. So my preference is to solve it through some form of automation, right? So what we're doing right now is figuring out what is the information that we must have. And then if we can agree on that, then we can do something like add a GitHub issue template and just send the link to that. And then that way, you know, anyone involved who has a work item to propose is coached through the process, you know, mostly just through that template. And obviously they can ask for help, but, you know, we're busy people. We do want to minimize the amount of, you know, kind of repeated information. But I'm welcome to any more feedback, but that's my thought on it. I saw someone else on the chair. And Manu, add yourself back to the queue if you had any comments on that. Joe?
Yeah, I had a couple of things, and I think I forgot one because Manu just made my brain go, which is absolutely respectfully do not want to put the burden on the chairs. All three of us are already overwhelmed with a million things to do, and what has been happening is good people, well-intentioned people with good ideas say, oh, hey, let's do this as a work item. There seems to be community support, but getting it from that to an engageable process, we've bumped into a whole bunch of different things. which actually leads to what I first put myself on the queue is for Manu Spornies for your issue 48 here. It'd be great to have the real names of these guys. I guess we just float over them and we get them. So that answers that question. I'm sorry, that was for your editors and contributors. So if you have the – so I think that's not in the process, by the way, Kim, to have the handles of the editors and contributors. So we've had it both ways, right? We've had people who want to be part of the team or want to lead an effort, but we don't have their GitHub handle, so we can't make them owners, which is a process automation thing we're doing for these repos. So I think what we're trying to do is use GitHub and use automated tools as much as possible to streamline getting into workability. So I'm all in support of lightweight. We're trying to create systems so that the operational burden isn't on the chairs, it's on the systems.
Christopher, anything to add?
Yeah, another aspect of this is that the chairs have to evaluate the community support for something because we just can't have work items that are waiting for a year on our list. I mean, it's almost better to put it on hold if there isn't community support and enough people interested in it, and it can be on somebody's private repository or whatever until they've got more community support. So, I mean, one of the steps in here, which maybe isn't completely written down, is that, I and other people are going to basically say, are we really ready to do this report? Is this something that could be finished in, less than a year and ideally like in 6 months? That's sort of one of my issues and why we're trying to in creating this process.
So I'm going to continue working through the queue, but I'm going to freeze it at 10. Any more comments on this sort of, automation or anything that we're discussing right now, I'd encourage you to capture it in the CCG process document or some other forum. Again, the document right now is trying to get to content. We're, on a related note, thinking about automation for that. So, we have every interest in making it as useful as possible, but there's been a lot of lingering work items with minimal traction, so we want to do some things to avoid that. So Heather, and then we'll have Ken. Heather, you first.
Hey, thanks, Kim. I think I also looked at this process and felt like it was, and I love process, don't get me wrong. I love all that, organization. I did feel it was overly heavy, specifically for a non-technical person. And I think that you may want to revisit this process to simplify it and streamline it after you get some feedback from the survey, because I think really this process needs to serve the overall goals of what we're all trying to achieve. And in some cases, if you are taking the lead and leading this group and, being one of the people that's creating and holding the structure of this place, of this community, that's an additional burden. So I don't know, maybe you look for someone to volunteer to manage this more, but I don't think the burden should be on the people that are actually doing the work. And it feels like a lot of bureaucracy, and I've done a lot of bureaucracy. And I mean, we're also just doing this to support the development of this community. So I think, we can try it, but then maybe we should get some feedback on it to see how effective it is.
Yeah, and again, I want to emphasize, all we're talking about is putting I don't want to use it in the contract, in a legal sense, but more like in a software engineering sense. Here's what we need in order to progress, right? And so if we know that up front and if we can make everyone's lives easier by telling them in advance what they need, I think it's the hard part is finding out, identifying what we need, getting consensus on that. I think the it's easy to create automation to let that happen, whether that's, through GitHub templates, that's already in GitHub land. So I realize that maybe seem like a burden for a new person, but maybe we have an email path for those people. Maybe we have a volunteer. I feel like these are all, there's getting the content and there's making it easier, and we want both. So there's, I don't see any contradiction there either. Ken, you're next.
Yeah, I just wanted to talk about a little bit the idea of whether or not, as we accept an item as a working item that we're going to have in that queue, does that mean that we expect that we're going to actually produce something at the end, or is the debate about whether or not we actually produce something occur after it goes on the queue and starts the whole process there?
So absolutely, that is something that we haven't covered, but and I may ask Joe to speak to that real quickly, but then we'll move on to new work items. But part of the overall CCG process is also saying, what are the valid forms of artifacts or results that can be produced from a work item? So that might include a draft report, something less formal, like a position paper. I'm not getting the terms exactly right. But yeah, we're trying to sort of, one example that's more interesting that we hadn't considered before was David Chadwick's, he wrote up something, it fed immediately into another specification. So that's valid as well. And as for when they need to be identified, Joe, do you have any comments on that?
I'm not sure what you mean by when they need to be identified, but I can speak to Ken's question a little bit. So we're definitely trying to get this whole process to be, again, as lightweight as possible, but streamlined from someone who has an idea all the way through to closure. And we have this little chart made of clip art in the document up above IP release that sort of explains where CCG work items might end up. And we're still teasing out the details of how do we keep on top of this. I mentioned in our last call that I think we did not accurately budget enough time for the work item review. So I think I want to streamline even what's in the calls. But we only want to adopt work items that are going to get to closure. Some work items don't. And, it'll be the chair's job to figure out how can we move things along or make a decision about deciding there isn't enough community support to move this item forward. I don't know if that answers either of your questions, but.
Yes,
yeah, that's
Thank
that's
you.
Good. Okay, so with that, we're going to kick off or propose to kick off a few items that are ready. Manu, can you talk to your three items?
Yes. So the first one up is the multi-hash spec. So Protocol Labs, who does IPFS and FilePoint and that kind of stuff, had published, specifically Juan Bennett had published a multi-hash specification in GitHub a couple of years ago. And we've seen it getting increasing support. Basically, the purpose of the spec is basically if you want to express a cryptographic hash, is there a standard way to do so? And before multi-hash, I'm asserting that there wasn't a nice, clean way to do it, meaning a nice, clean, future-proof way to do it that gives all of the benefits that people working on, like IoT devices and people working all the way up at the application layer could live with. Multi-hash is like super simple, it's lightweight, it's like a 5-page specification, it's pretty much done, it's got multiple implementations already, and this was just formalizing that specification so that we could take it forward at IETF. The reason this group cares about that stuff is because, we've talked about resource integrity proofs, we do cryptographic hashing all over, agnostic of whatever blockchain you're using, or verifiable credential approach you're doing. We all do cryptographic hashes. So this is a topic that touches absolutely everybody in the group. So the proposal is there. So I put the link to the GitHub issue in there. There's a link to a mailing list thread on specifics, like exactly what, like exactly which community members are going to benefit, and so on and so forth. So I suggest that you go take a look at that. The folks on the spec right now are Ron Bennett and myself. Ganesh is also listed on it, as is Amy. So we're hoping that, you know, the four of us can push this spec forward. Again, it's probably about 80% of the way there already. And that's it for multi-hash. Do you want me to continue to multi-base or stop for questions?
Let me just see. If there's anyone on the queue, okay.
Yeah, I hopped in with a question. this sounds great. I mean, I think all three of these that you're going to go through look great. But I was, I'm confused by what's the relationship here with IETF?
So some of these specifications don't fit well at W3C. So W3C tends to focus on the browser. They tend to focus on application layer stuff, kind of high-level things. IETF tends to focus on low-level things, like the bits and the bytes in a certain protocol, just really kind of like the atomic pieces that you use to build higher-level protocols. So that's why IETF, this kind of specification is something that is feels like it would find an easier home in IETF than it would at W3C.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
Okay, let's move on to the next two.
All right. So the next one is kind of a sister specification. So the next one is multi-base. So multi-hash, when you look at a multi-hash, there's an encoding that tells you specifically what cryptographic hash was used to generate the hash. So it's a tiny little identifier that you put in front of the data so that you can identify what comes after the identifier. Multi-base is the exact same concept, but for base encoding. So when we send things across the internet and the web, we do base encoding for things like binary data. So you can't just take binary data and just shove it into an email. Emails can't express raw binary data. So you have to encode the binary data in like using like letters and numbers, for example. So multi-base, there are many different ways of base encoding. So for example, you know, there's base 2. Base 8, base 10, base 16, base 32, base 64, base 58. These are all different ways that we encode stuff. So to give you an example, like Bitcoin uses base 58, but they use a Bitcoin specific version of base 58. Flickr, the web service, you know, the site on the internet uses base 58, but they use their own flavor of base 58. Same thing for hex. Like, is it lowercase hex? Is it uppercase hex? So multibase is a future, a way of encoding the base encoding. And what you can do is you can kind of fit these two specifications together like Lego building blocks. So, you know, if you have a multi-hash expression as raw binary, you can encode it using multibase. And when you put those two things together, you have full forward and backward compatibility across cryptographic hashes and across encoding schemes. And what that does is it enables any of us building these systems to have a lot more flexibility into encoding formats and cryptographic hashes that we use in our system. So to give you an example of where this, like where the rubber meets the road, this would enable, for example, VerisOne and Sovereign and IPFS to express certain primitive things like a SHA-256 in the same exact way using multibase and multi-hash. And what that means is that we can then start building and using common libraries across Sovereign and IPFS and VerisOne. So that's the goal. And that's kind of what the multi-base specification is about. It's about base encoding.
Johnny's on the queue. Johnny, do you want to go?
Yeah. So just my question as far as how do we keep these specs up to date? Right now, a lot of those codes are hard. They're The lookup table is hard-coded in a GitHub repository, so is IETF going to be the source of truth for these registration of the strings that are associated with the code?
Eventually, yes. For the time being, the specification is generated from the GitHub repository. So whenever someone goes in and adds something to those tables in GitHub in the multi-formats repo, the next time we generate the spec, those tables are updated from the GitHub repo. So there'll be a time period where we're like, there's going to be a transition period from one to the next. And I've already talked about that with, you know, the protocol apps folks, and they're fine with it. And then once you know, that happens, like, IETF is very used to running registries. Like, they run hundreds of registries for the web and the internet. And this is just like, they're totally used to, and they have a process of doing that and making sure that the registries are up to date. As far as keeping the spec text up to date, it's just a pull request. So if you want to see something changed in the spec, you do a pull request, and we will, you know, in the next time we do a publication at IETF, which we can do at any point, that new spec text will be put in there.
And what's the turnaround time for that? So let's say the same issue as far as the COSE libraries is like, you know, they're years out of date. So how will we keep up to date?
The first thing is an architecture question. So we want to structure it so that it's easy to keep it up to date. And multi-base and multi-hash is built where that is like a thing. It's really easy to keep it up to date. It's super simple spec. Most of the information exists in a registry. Updating a registry at IETF is a fairly quick turnaround process. So it's not going to fall out of date in the same way that the Jose stuff has fallen out of date. The turnaround for, like, before it becomes an IETF RFC is super fast. Like, you know, if someone wants to change a word in the specification, the PR can go in a matter of minutes, and I can have a new version published at IETF in a matter of minutes. So it's very, very fast until it becomes an RFC, and then you expect some stability for the specification.
Okay, if we're good on that, let's move on to HashLink.
I think Mike Lauder put himself on the queue. Oh, no, sorry.
He removed himself.
My bad. Okay, HashLink is the next one. So here's the link to the HashLink specification. So HashLink builds on top of multi-base and multi-hash. At the last rebooting, Ganesh and Kim and a few of us from DigiBazaar worked on resource integrity proofs. We deployed that out into proof of concepts and pilots, and we believe that resource integrity proofs are no longer the right way to go. We probably want to do hash links. Again, that link that I just put in IRC has a link to the whole discussion of why we want to do hash links instead of resource integrity proofs. But the fundamental thing is, like, a hash link is a way of saying, here's a cryptographic hash of the document I'm linking to, and here are multiple locations that you can get it from. Not just one, but multiple different locations. And with hash links, you can actually link across blockchains and the web. So you can provide, you can say, here's the document I'm talking about, and here's an IPFS link for it, and here's a Bitcoin transaction link for it, and here's two web links for it. And as long as your resolver knows how to resolve those URLs and get a document, you've got like a totally cross-network way of doing cryptographic linking. This is super important for like JSON-LD context. It's important for like the sovereign schema expression. It's important for the items that Bowden raised, which are like linking to images outside of a verifiable credential, linking to documents that someone has physically signed and scanned. So again, it's one of these micro, these really tiny specifications that we can push forward at IETF that has lots of positive upsides to everyone in the community. And that's it for the HashLink spec.
Thank you, Manu. And we're at time, so I'm going to encourage people to respond to the mailing list or the issues directly if you have any feedback on that The remaining items in this week, we will move to next week. That includes the GID Resolver work item kickoff or proposal, as we just did here. And then we'll also talk about the survey and functional identity proposed, kicking those off. And we'll do a lot of other things next week. Thank you and have a great day.